From Washington, D.C., this is On the Ground. For Palestinians, the 2024 celebration of Land Day took on special meaning as the Israeli military has destroyed or poisoned vast swaths of territory that has sustained the indigenous population for millennia.
We Palestinians have a beautiful and undeniable connection to the land that goes back generations. Colonizers destroyed the land with their bulldozers and their bombs and their poison. If you love the land, you don't destroy it. Let me say that again. If you love the land, you don't destroy it.
And Gerald Horn weighs in on the dangerous climb of the escalation ladder in West Asia and Ukraine.
The bombing in Syria is intended to lure the United States into a wider conflict with Iran.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam. First, our headlines. A doctor at the Stay Taman Israeli Detention Center near Beersheba has blown the whistle on deaths and horrific conditions for Gazans, both those labeled as combatants and civilians. The doctor wrote a letter anonymously to Israel's Attorney General and Defense Health Ministers, and this letter was viewed and reported on April 4th by the newspaper Haaretz. The doctor wrote that his patients, which are held in cages and given no due process, suffered beatings, torture, and were shackled so tightly on their legs and hands that some patients required amputations of limbs. Last month, Haaretz revealed that at least 27 detainees were known to have died in custody at this or other camps since October 7th. Stay Taman has been likened to the U.S. torture facility at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and referred to as a concentration camp. During Israel's two-week bombardment of the Al-Shifa hospital, which ended on April 1st, the Israel military shot and killed at least 13 children, according to a new report by the EuroMed Human Rights Monitor. The report said, quote, "For over a week now, the Israeli army has been conducting systematic and horrifying military operations inside and around Al-Shifa medical complex. These crimes include extrajudicial executions and deliberate killings of Palestinian civilians," end quote. The Geneva-based organization added that its field team had received identical testimonies about the killings and executions of Palestinian children who were between the ages of 4 and 16. More than 400 Gazans were killed in the attack and destruction of the hospital, including doctors, nurses, and patients in their beds. In culture and media here in D.C., organizations including the Korea Policy Institute are demanding an official end to the Korean War after 74 years of an armistice, which means that technically that war, which killed millions of Koreans, is still not over. The coalition is holding what they are calling an anti-imperialist detour of the National Mall on April 5th, beginning at 12 noon. The announcement for the action says the tour will, quote, "provide participants with critical perspective on the state memory enshrined at the World War II, Vietnam War, MLK, and Korean War memorials." The tour begins at the World War II memorial at noon. For more information about this education project, even for those hearing this show after this action, go to the website of the Korea Policy Institute at kpolicy.org. And those are headlines and happenings. I'll be right back with more news with historian and author Gerald Horn.
All I know is keep going, run, better run. Mama told me never fold, run, better run. Like Jenny told Forrest Gump, run, better run. The race for freedom ain't won, run, better run. Had to make it out the red clay, run, better run. West side of Atlanta, yeah, that's where I'm from. Flatland. outside, our hands on like a glove. Moving like minority, eating on the run. Still an underground king, and that's worth the bun. Locked in like Rice Street without a bun. I was playing with the pie the way before LeBron. My wife was born a redhead, but now she a blonde. Politicians lie, and your favorite rapper is a con.
This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital. I'm Esther Ivarum. Now I'm thrilled to be joined by our geopolitical analyst, the author and activist Professor Gerald Horn, author of more than 40 books, including his latest collaborations, I Dare Say, a Gerald Horn Reader, and Acknowledging Radical Histories. Welcome back to the show, Gerald.
Thank you for inviting me, and I look forward to seeing you and our friends on May 11th at your 10th anniversary at Busboys and Poets.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I'm so happy that you can join us. I'm really looking forward to it. But this week has made me wonder if I'll make it to May 11th. We have what I've been referring to as Israel off the leash, the evidence of a horrific massacre at Al-Shifa Hospital, which was the largest hospital in all of historic Palestine, and the evidence that between 300 and 400 people were massacred there, including doctors, nurses, evidence of young children with sniper wounds. Just horrific. I have a clip from Electronic Intifada from one of their editors, Nora Barrows Friedman, to kind of describe what the survivors saw.
When the families of patients, medical staff, and displaced persons who were trapped inside the hospital and its grounds during Israel's raid and massacres returned to retrieve their loved ones, many found bodies in fragments flattened under bulldozer treads. Children's corpses were discovered burned beyond recognition. The Gaza government media office added that, quote, inside the complex and its surroundings, the occupation army killed more than 400 martyrs and attempted to hide its abominable crime by executing hundreds of civilians, the wounded and the sick within the walls of the Al-Shifa medical complex. They covered the bodies with piles of sand, bulldozed them, buried them, and mixed them with the ground of the complex. Moreover, more than 300 prisoners were arrested, while over 100 Palestinian civilians are still missing as a result of the occupation's shocking crime.
So this is just one of the horrors from this week. What has gotten more attention is the murder of 7 aid workers, including a Palestinian driver from the World Kitchen Organization. And also, we can't ignore Israel bombing the Iranian consulate complex in Syria. So let's just start there. Between that and, you know, actions in Ukraine or in Russia, I've been afraid that we're on the precipice of like World War III.
Well, certainly there's something to what you say. And I would also say that we're seeing unfold in real time and on television the essence of settler colonialism. What befell North America, for example, in Texas in the 1870s and 1880s, with the liquidation of the indigenous population and the driving of others off of their land. Speaking of the latter, the LA Times has revealed what we already know, which is that there is a powerful faction in Israel which tends to drive Palestinians out of Gaza into the Sinai Desert and then settle that particular piece of territory. And as Jared Kushner has suggested, it's beachfront territory that could easily be constructed with condos of various sorts. Also, I think what's at play is the nostrum of late Pentagon Chief Donald Rumsfeld. That is to say, if you have a problem, the way to deal with it is to enlarge it, because that creates new dynamics. And certainly, the bombing of the World Kitchen is enlarging the conflict. It led to condemnations from even Foreign Minister David Cameron of Great Britain. Exhibit A in that regard is the aforementioned bombing in Syria, which is intended to lure the United States into a wider conflict with Iran, which, as you've already suggested, could be the prelude to World War III. And meanwhile, back in Washington, you have this charade taking place whereby there is an effort by the Biden team, assisted by Senator Schumer, to throw Netanyahu overboard and replace him with Benny Gantz. And the protests in Israel are pointing in that same direction. But we all know that Benny Gantz is no prize. And this is basically rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. So you are correct to see that this may be the beginning of something worse.
Switching from that pretty dire scenario, and I don't want to belittle it at all, I told the investigative journalist Arun Gupta last week that I hate using this figure of more than 33,000 dead in Gaza since October 7th, that really the people who have been murdered and buried under the rubble, their bodies may not ever be recovered. And so when I heard the UN rapporteur for Occupy Palestine give her report last week, which she said that, you know, the threshold for genocide had been met, she used the figure of 12,000 murdered and presumed dead. And so I think we're close to 45,000 people who are murdered or missing. But so I don't want to belittle that, but we also have this conflict ongoing in Ukraine, where we know that I think at least 140 people were killed at a concert near Moscow last month. And according to Russian investigators, they have linked these suspects to Ukraine, to Ukrainian officials. And at the same time, France, which we've discussed before, is still talking about making moves to send French troops into Ukraine, and we know there are troops from all of these NATO countries. All these NATO countries that are in Ukraine, maybe officially, unofficially, certainly mercenaries from many of these countries in Europe and from the U.S. have been there. But this continued chirping from France's president about actually sending in French troops en masse is also like a major tripwire.
Well, France has a local dilemma insofar as President Macron is trying to outflank the right wing as embodied by Madame Le Pen and the left wing as embodied by Mélenchon. And there's an EU-wide dilemma insofar as the sanctions against Russia obviously have not worked. It's cut off the European Union from energy supplies and the biggest market in Europe, speaking of Russia, 150 million strong compared to number two Germany, 82 million strong. And now we see that the European Union is stuck with the United States. That is to say, instead of getting energy through a pipeline from Russia, it's being transported by ships from the United States, which is a boon to the natural gas producers in southern Louisiana and eastern Texas, not so much for the consumers in Western Europe. Likewise, the European Union is finding it difficult to compete with China, particularly in the all-important vehicles market. There is a real danger that Mercedes, BMW, Volkswagen may not survive to the end of this century, not least because Chinese vehicles, particularly electric vehicles from BYD, of which Warren Buffett of Omaha is a major investor, they're flooding into Europe. Just as if they're not tariffs, they'll be flooding into the United States. And so this is a real crisis for the European Union. Likewise, what's happening with regard to Russia and China, not only are they getting ever closer, but Russia in particular is reorienting its economy towards China, away from Europe, and also reorienting its economy towards India, of which it has had a 75-year-long relationship. And both giants are orienting their economies towards Africa. Note here the Belt and Road Initiative. Note here the flood of Chinese capital into Ethiopia. And that also helps to illuminate why President Macron has turned from a pre-February 2022 dove into an April 2024 hawk, because according to even Mr. Putin, he is quite upset with the fact that the former neocolonial appendages of France, speaking of the nations of the Sahel, are busily booting out France unceremoniously. I'm speaking of Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, to name a few, and are turning towards Russia. And so, according to Mr. Putin, this has led to this loose talk about putting French boots on the ground in Ukraine up to a number of 20,000 or more, which is basically sending the flower of French youth to a premature death. The other bad news coming in to France is the election in Senegal, where the winner a few weeks ago was in prison alongside the current prime minister recently installed this week. This new team have pledged to break or disrupt, I should say, relations with France. And that too is not good news, because if they go along that path, like Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, they probably too will try to orient towards Russia and China. And so France is in the horns of a dilemma, and that has led to all of this loose talk about escalating in Ukraine.
I think also you've been following some news out of Southern Africa and kind of these larger geopolitical aspects.
That's true. And obviously, I'm sure you know, and I'm sure your audience recognizes, that the foreign minister of South Africa was just in Washington, D.C., and her embrace was not necessarily friendly, because there's been a downturn in relations between Pretoria and Washington, because Pretoria brought the International Court of Justice case against U.S. ally Israel, where a plausible case for genocide was made, not to mention the implicit, or if not explicit, addendum that the United States is an aider and abettor of genocide.
Right.
And so we see that is a move in Congress to try to clip the wings of South Africa with regard to the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act. And likewise, what that has contributed to is Washington trying to gain leverage against South Africa by improving relations with neighboring countries with which it had a cool ties, to put it mildly. I'm speaking of Zimbabwe, where nationwide sanctions were eased, although sanctions against the leadership were not. That did not necessarily please the Mnangagwa regime, which proceeded to boot out the Agency for International Development. But I'm sure that this move towards Zimbabwe will not end there. But the real story comes from Angola. Recall that it was in 1975, the United States and apartheid South Africa tried to forestall independence of Angola and took Cuban troops to defeat that diabolical scheme. But now the worm has turned, and we see that Secretary of State Blinken was in Luanda just a few months ago, that all sorts of aid pledges were made. But Angola is not turning away from China, its major partner. And in fact, President Lorenzo was just in China a week or two ago, coming back with a bag full of goodies. So we welcome the easing of tensions with Angola. And to the extent that we can say that about Zimbabwe, we welcome that as well. But one takeaway from Foreign Minister Pandor of South Africa, her trip to Washington, was her meeting at Howard University, honoring anti-apartheid activists. Hopefully that will help to reinvigorate the pro-South Africa, pro-democracy lobby that sadly was allowed to shrivel since the first democratic elections in that Southern African nation in 1994, April.
Speaking of elections, we're rapidly running out of time, but did you want to mention Turkey and all the problems Erdogan is having?
He has multiple problems. Recall he came into office a few decades ago under the slogan, zero problems with neighbors. Now his slogan should be multiple problems with multiple neighbors.
More problems, more money, more problems.
Starting with Syria, just across the border, the relations were once close. He wrecked those relations, which now has weakened Syria to the point where, as we noted a moment or two ago, Israel has been bombing that country. The United States is illegally occupying a good deal of Syrian territory, and according to news reports, stealing the petroleum of Syria. We also see that President Erdogan has been playing a double game with regard to the Ukraine crisis. On the one hand, allowing Turkey to be a sieve, allowing goods to flow into Russia, while his son-in-law heads a drone firm that has made a pretty penny by selling those contraptions to Ukraine. And those drones have been used to wipe out a number of Russian soldiers. And so we have to pay attention to Turkey, or Turkey, as it now terms itself. So certainly Mr. Erdogan is up to his neck in alligators. And I'm afraid to say it couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Well, just real quick, and I hate to give our hemisphere short shrift, but I've been trying to keep up with the status of elections. And we know that the uncommitted vote is going strong, and it's still survived in this latest round of primaries this week. At the same time, I reported last week how two states, Florida and South Carolina, are allowing voter map to go forward to be used this year, even though it has been judged by the courts to be discriminatory against African Americans. I read this week that librarians who are choosing to continue to distribute information about, you know, racism, the true history of settler colonialism in this country, are having their jobs and their livelihood threatened, could be even threatened with arrest. And just before I spoke to you, I just happened to see that the U.S. is building a military base in the disputed area of Guyana, which Venezuela and Guyana have pledged to work together peacefully to resolve. And also, I received a message, an urgent appeal to send food aid to Cuba, because just like Israel is using food as a weapon and starvation as a weapon against Gaza, the U.S. blockade, this 60 plus year blockade of Cuba, is starving the people of Cuba. And so, I don't know, we can end on that. And I know you want to at least talk about our patron saint, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.
Well, certainly that was a great leap backwards when he was assassinated in April 1968. I'm not clear as to whether we have recovered from that blow to this very day. With regard to the other points you mentioned, President Maduro of Venezuela has charged that in Guyana, his neighbor, that is actually the CIA and ExxonMobil, which has uncovered this massive petroleum deposit, that are actually in charge. Obviously, Georgetown disagrees. With regard to the repression in public schools, I have in my hand right now an article in the current issue of the American Historical Review by Woody Holton. You might recall that his father was a former governor of Virginia, and the subtitle is "The Far Right Takes Aim at Black History." And that is to say that not only do you see these maneuvers in Florida seeking to circumscribe the teaching of Black history in K-12 schools, but also you see that a number of teachers have lost their jobs because of trying to tell an accurate story about enslavement of Africans in the first instance. It's a real crisis. And speaking of real crisis, you mentioned the deployment of these fraudulent electoral maps. On the other side of the equation, you might have noticed the decision coming from the courts in Florida, which, while circumscribing reproductive freedom for women, are allowing to go forward a referendum on whether or not Roe versus Wade should be restored. Now, that should drive anti-Trump forces to the polls, along with a companion referendum decriminalizing the use of cannabis.
Well, lots going on in the world, and we're grateful that we have Professor Gerald Horn to discuss all these matters with. I've been speaking with our geopolitical analyst, Professor Gerald Horn. Thank you for joining me today, Gerald.
Thank you for inviting me.
What the hair look like? Bet the hair look nice. Don't that make you sweat? Don't that feel too tight? Yo, what your hair look like? Bet your hair look nice. How long your hair is? You need to get your life. You only see Oriental. You steady working that dental. You popping off at the lip and run your mouth like a treadmill. Not your exotic vacation. I'm bored with your fascination. I need that PayPal, PayPal, PayPal if you want education.
All around the world, love women every shade of hair.
Ladies, we was born in the 80s, so pretty like the Euphrates, and party like some Kuwaitis, deeper than some diplomas, current like some hot yoga, taking back the misnomers and teleporting through trauma, teleporting through trauma, teleporting through trauma. I've been stacking my karma, Nefertiti, no drama, make a feminist planet, woman haters get banished, covered up or not, don't ever take us for granted.
All around the world, love women every shade of
Land Day, or Yom al-Ard, has been celebrated by Palestinians every March 30th since 1976. It commemorates the martyrdom of six unarmed Palestinians slain by Israel in protest over Israel's illegal confiscation of land about the area from the tip of Manhattan to Central Park in New York. It celebrates connection to the land with protests, vigils, and the planting of olive trees. This year, the commemoration of Land Day takes on special urgency with the acceleration of the Palestinian genocide over these past few months, which we're currently in the midst of. Palestinian Youth Movement and a coalition of other organizations that included Party for Socialism and Liberation, Maryland to Palestine, and American Muslims for Palestine organized a Land Day gathering as part of thousands of other gatherings held nationally and globally in DuPont Circle here in D.C. Here are a mix of voices, starting with a chant of return, a chant of return for all displaced Palestinians to return to the various cities and villages where they were displaced, beginning with the Nakba in 1948.
Palestinian Youth Movement. We are here today on Land Day. On March 30th, 1976, Palestinians declared a day of protest and rebellion across all of occupied Palestine. They defended 21,000 dunams of land in Al-Jalil that Israel wanted to steal for themselves. Shame on them! But Palestinians resisted. We always resist. From Gaza to 48 to the West Bank, Palestinians coordinated joint protests, strikes, and mobilizations that were met with Zionist brutality, with the IOF killing six Palestinians and wounding dozens more. Shame on them. From that day forward, we commemorate every March 30th in our national liberation struggle as Land Day. and that is why we are here. Land Day is a turning point in our struggle. It places the highest emphasis on the land itself because our land is the unifying feature of Palestinian national identity. We have a collective commitment to liberate and return to the land above all other objectives. Land Day is a rejection. Land Day is a rejection of the geographic, political, and cultural fragmentation that the Zionists have imposed on us since 1948. From its foundation, the illegitimate Zionist entity has always sought to fracture our people, to separate Palestinians in the occupied interior from those in the West Bank and Gaza and in the refugee camps and in the diaspora, including here in the United States. Fracturing our people, alienating us from our land, is at the core of the Zionist project. And their logic has always been the same, whether through outright genocide or these so-called peace processes forced upon us against our will. We reject that. This rejection of fragmentation, whether of our land, our families, or our identities, is our declaration that liberation and return are not a distant dream, but the inevitable outcome and the destiny of our people. For this reason, Palestinians everywhere have always and will always see our people in Gaza as one with and inseparable from all of us, no matter how much Israel tries to sever us from them through siege, isolation, and now genocide. Never. Land Day demonstrations have focused on the right of return and Palestinians' unbreakable will to return physically to those villages and towns from which our people were expelled during the Nakba. The monumental Great March of Return was launched on this day 6 years ago, a year-long demonstration displaying the brilliance of our people and the resilience of our resistance. The Great March was the embodiment of our people's desire and affirmation to return to all the homelands stolen from us. And so this Land Day, at the time of both the worst Zionist aggression, but also the fiercest Palestinian resistance since the Nakba itself, we declare the oneness of our people and our land with full belief and confidence in our ultimate liberation. We indigenous Palestinians have a beautiful and undeniable connection to the land that goes back generations. Colonizers destroyed the land with their bulldozers and their bombs and their poison. If you love the land, you don't destroy it. Let me say that again. If you love the land, you don't destroy it. You do not attach yourself to imperial and colonial powers whose only priority is to exploit the people and her resources. We Palestinians, we protect and we honor the land. Our land is the home of our native fruits and vegetables, the staples to our grandmothers' recipes that have been handed down by their grandmothers before them and their grandmothers before them. Our land is the inspiration for our folk songs, the canvas to our stories, the blueprint of our art, and most importantly, the land is our home. Our land, Palestine, is the only home we have ever wanted and the only one we will ever seek, and we know that we will live in a free Palestine and we are ready for that day. Woo! We save the native seeds to replant when our soil is liberated. We pass on our language, our culture, and our traditions to every single generation. We know the names of the villages that we come from. Even when the Zionists try to erase it from the map, we remember. And we know that we will drink mint tea in the mountains in the morning and drink fruit by the sea in the evening, because we will be free of checkpoints. Our land will be one. Our people will be one. All of Palestine will be free. The struggle for Palestinian liberation is not different from the struggle to liberate our land. In the same way the colonizers view us, they view the land as only a resource to pillage and to discard, so they see us, Palestinians. That is why they kill us. That is why they brutalize us. That is why they ethnically cleanse us. And so, as we envision our future of liberation as Palestinians, we know that true liberation is impossible without the liberation of the land. I fight every day for the right to return to my home and the home of my mother and her mother and her mother and her mother before that, going back hundreds of generations. I fight for the right to live freely on the entirety of the land that we have sustained and cultivated for generations. So I'm asking everybody here, why do you fight? Why are you here? Because you need that energy and that passion to sustain you every single day. Our struggle is not an easy one, but it is a righteous one, and we will win. Today and every day we say, from the river to the sea, by the olives, figs, and oranges on all of our trees, our struggle will continue by any means. All the walls will crumble and the Zionists will flee. We will not stop fighting until Palestine is free. All power to the people, all power to Palestine, glory to our martyrs, and victory to our struggle. So say it as loudly as you can with me. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Thank you.
Free, free, free Palestine.
Organizer with Maryland to Palestine. We are a grassroots abolitionist Palestinian-led movement based here in the DMV fighting for total liberation of Palestine. We have all heard the phrase, land you have to kill for is not yours, while land you have to die for is. But what does it mean to kill for a land that is not yours? It is not as simple as murdering and then moving onto the land, although sometimes that's how it goes. The Zionist entity kills for land in a way that strips it of everything that is indigenous to it and only leaves room for the settler. There is no peaceful living or taking of land as a settler. The settler bulldozes through homes to build shopping malls. The settler destroys indigenous olive groves to plant European trees. The settler releases wild boars onto the land of Palestinians to destroy their crops and livelihood. The settler will never know what it means to love their land. And what is happening in Gaza right now might be the most clear form of settler colonialism we've seen in Palestine yet. The Zionist entity is ethnically cleansing the Palestinian population from the land, leveling all buildings to the ground, and using white phosphorus to burn through the soil. And while the genocide continues, they are showing their disgusting settler nature by planning to build properties, resorts, and commercial areas on top of rubble that hasn't even settled yet. They are already claiming which seaside property will be theirs. Because the settler truly loves nothing about their land except for what power, status, and capitalist gains it can bring for them. But we, as Palestinians, we love and protect our land. Caring for our land is ingrained in every aspect of our life. We create our identity and our communities around harvesting our land, sharing what we plant, and standing steadfast as the occupier attempts to erase us. We are still standing here today, still fighting because of our love for our land. To die for your land as a Palestinian means not only sacrificing yourself for your own purposes, but for the sake of your people and those who will come after you. This is the ultimate form of martyrdom, and we should all look to Palestinians as examples of how to care for their land and community. On this land day, March 30th, 2024, we demand that Palestinian land be protected, honored, and recognized. We demand the right of return for every single Palestinian. Recognized by its name of Palestine, our cities be returned to their original names, our homes and land be returned to their original inhabitants. On this land day, we honor those who have died and continue to die for their land. This land day, we reject all forms of the settler colonial Zionist entity and the ways in which it attempts to erase the indigenous population of Palestine. This land day, we continue to rise up to fight for liberation until Palestine is free from the river to the sea.
You are listening to speakers and attendees at the Rally for Land Day in Washington, D.C. on March 30th, 2024. This is On the Ground. I'm Chantal James. Stay with us for more from the Land Day Rally.
On the Ground is a totally listener-sponsored, supported show, and we are in need of your support. If you rely on the show, if you listen to the show, you come to look forward to what we are able to offer every week, please support us on Patreon at patreon.com/ontheground show. And you can also give on our website through PayPal or other means if you want to send a check. All that information is there. But please, please support us. I want to thank our supporters on Patreon so much. And for those who are already supporting, if you can tell a friend who you know would love to sign up, we need the support. Patreon.com/ontheground show or go to onthegroundshow.org. Thank you.
Baltimore. I usually attend the rallies in Baltimore, but I wanted to come to D.C. today to be a part of a larger rally. Today's the Land Day, and it's been happening every March 30th since 1976, and you know, in 2024, it's even more critical and important that Palestine, occupied Palestine, is able to completely have the right of return for a ceasefire immediately and all aid to Israel. I just think it's incumbent upon everyone to stand up for people who are clearly being genocided and ethnically cleansed from their land. And, you know, as an American who lives on stolen land every single day that I've been alive, every single moment of my existence, knowing that our country has never really given reparations to the Native people that we stole land from or to any of the enslaved people that built our country, especially like here in the Capitol, I think it's just really important that, you know, if you're going to stand up for something, that it's for the liberation of all. Because without true liberation, there's no equity, there's no equality. We're just part of that chugging capitalist machine that relies on consumers and people to be subjects. And unless the people rise up and all come together, we're never going to get out of this cycle of capitalism and war and violence. And in a world where, you know, we could choose anything. You know, we could choose to be loving and kind and make art and feed people and make sure that people are housed. You know, there are cultures all over the world who take care of each other and that there's no homelessness, there's no hunger.
That's very true.
And, you know, to think
that's not a lie.
and to think that, you know, that this is what we're choosing is just unfathomable to me, and it has to stop. And I think that occupied Palestine and that the people of Gaza are really that call for all people to wake up to see, who are you? You know, what is it that you truly believe in? And if you believe in humanity, if you are, you know, religious or not religious, but that you believe in your fellow people, in your own family, that, you know, how can that not extend to this genocide that we can see happening in the palm of our hand every single minute?
My name is Brandon. I don't mess with imperialism. So it's Free Palestine. Free Palestine, Free Palestine. Period. That's it.
Exactly. And what about you?
My name is Hai. I have a lot of friends who are personally affected. They have family members, or they know they have friends in Gaza that have been killed. Their whole families have been wiped out with no good reason. And, you know, it's just the same cycle happening over and over in plenty of places. This is the latest iteration. And as an American, our tax dollars are paying for these bombs that are dropping down, killing children. And we need a change in our administration in order to do something about what we're doing.
Exactly. Thank you.
Okay, I'm out here at DuPont Circle for Land Day with Miko Pellet, author and activist. And so tell everybody why you came out today.
Well, I think it's time for people to realize just how severe the situation is. The United States is not just complicit in supporting the genocide. The United States is participating in genocide. This administration is participating. They're giving the perpetrators of a genocide weapons to continue to kill innocent civilians. And they're giving them, like, big weapons. You know, they're sending them... I mean, it's unheard of. It's beyond belief that we as citizens, American citizens, are not out here enraged that their administration is willing to do this, is willing to be part. It's our tax dollars. They're participating in the massacre. Can you imagine supporting, sending weapons to Hitler while he was murdering millions of Jews and others in Europe? This is what this is equivalent, not to mention inviting Netanyahu to speak in front of a joint session, as the Speaker of the House did just last week. This is unbelievable. I mean, the comparison to what the Nazis did has to be brought up. It has to be discussed. Can you imagine inviting Hitler to participate, to talk in front of Congress as a hero? This is beyond horrifying. You know, words fail me, you know?
Okay, thank you. I see the prayer is over now, yeah. So let's go back to the rally. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Salam ya watanna, ya watani ya habayya. يا ابو الدقب الطيب يا وطني يا حبيب يا ابو قلب الطيب حتى نارك جنة حتى نارك جنة وجنة جنة جنة تسلم يا وطننا جنة 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 تسلم يا وطننا يا وطني يا حبيب يا ابو قلب الطيب يا
وطن يا حبيب يا ابو قلاب الطيب حتى نارك جنة حتى نارك جنة 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 تسلم يا وطننا جنة 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 تسلم يا وطننا يا وطن يا حبيب يا ابو قلاب الطيب يا وطن يا حبيب يا ابو قلاب الطيب حتى نارك جنة حتى نارك جنة
Good job everybody.
Students for Justice in Palestine. We are a collective of Students for Justice in Palestine chapters from George Washington University, George Mason University, American University, Georgetown University, University of Maryland, Howard University, and the University of Baltimore, Maryland, Baltimore County. Student movement against the Zionist occupation of Palestine and the liberation of our people. Today, in the belly of the beast, we stand in strength and solidarity with the Palestinian people on this land day. Land Day continues to be a powerful reminder of the ongoing struggle for justice and human rights in Palestine, the struggle for the liberation of our people. It commemorates sacrifices made by Palestinians in defense of our land, our homes, and our dignity every single day for the last 76 years. It is a day to remember the resilience, the strength, the steadfastness of a people who have faced displacement, occupation, oppression, and now genocide for 76 years. As the Students for Justice in Palestine, we refuse to remain silent in the face of injustice. We refuse to turn a blind eye to the continual violation of international law and human rights committed against the Palestinian people. We refuse to accept the status quo of occupation and apartheid. We refuse to sit idly by while we see our very own universities enable and materially aid this occupation. We call for an end to the occupation and settler colonization of Palestinian land. We demand the right of return for Palestinian refugees be fulfilled as enshrined in international law. We advocate for justice and freedom for all marginalized people and oppressed classes across the globe, from Turtle Island to Puerto Rico to Congo to Sudan to Haiti to Yemen to Palestine. University campuses are critical battlegrounds in the struggle for liberation. We are students at some of the wealthiest universities in the imperial core of the world. Each and every one of our universities have intimate ties to the ruling body of the U.S. Empire and the weapons manufacturers that fuel its murderous engine. From our student comrades who struggled against South African apartheid, the United States occupation of Vietnam, and the subjugation of black people right here in this colony every single day, we know that the student movement is not just noise. It is raw power in the imperial core. We, the students, will not rest. We will not rest, we will not tire, and we will absolutely not be silent for even a single moment until our universities cut all material ties to the colonization of Palestine and the genocide of our people. In the last 6 months, our SJPs have organized sit-ins, protests, and divestment campaigns on our campuses and in our communities. We have disrupted events that seek to normalize and justify the occupation. We have stood up against censorship and intimidation by our university administration and the United States federal government. We have worked tirelessly to raise awareness and build solidarity with the Palestinian people. But our actions are not just symbolic. They are part of a long-standing tradition of anti-imperial student organizing for justice in Palestine and all colonized and oppressed lands. We draw inspiration from the Palestinian student movements of the past, from the students who led the first Intifada to the students who continue to resist today in Palestine. We also recognize the recent scholasticide, the deliberate targeting of Palestinian educational institutions by the Israeli military. Every single university in Gaza has been destroyed. This is not just an attack on buildings. It's an attack on the right to education and, more deliberately, on the future of Palestinian youth. It is a stark reminder.
Shame.
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 It is a stark reminder that the brutal occupation seeks to wipe out Palestinian society once and for all, intentionally debilitating our youth from building anew. But in the face of such challenges, in the face of arrests, shootings, and chemical attacks against Palestinian students and those who stand for the Palestinian Liberation Movement, we remain undeterred. We will continue to organize, we will continue to educate, and we will continue to resist every single day, and we will continue to demand accountability for genocide and to advocate for the end of apartheid, the lifting of the siege on Gaza, the release of all Palestinian prisoners, the end of occupation, and the full dismantling of Zionism. Together we can make a difference. Together we can build a world where justice, equality, and dignity are not just ideals, but realities for all colonized peoples. So today, as we march and raise our voices for the liberation of Palestine, let us remember the words of the great Palestinian revolutionary Ghassan Kanafani. The Palestinian cause is not a cause for Palestinians only, but a cause for every revolutionary, wherever he is, as a cause of the exploited and oppressed masses in our area. Thank you. From SJPs to Palestine!
From SJPs to Palestine!
Student repression is a crime!
Student repression is a crime!
From SJPs to Palestine!
From SJPs to Palestine!
Student repression is a crime!
Student repression is a crime!
The students, united, will never be defeated. The students united 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 will never be defeated.
The students united will never be defeated.
Let's give DMV SJP another round of applause.
You have been listening to speakers and attendees at the Rally for Land Day, held March 30th, 2024 at DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C. Land Day has been celebrated since 1976 by Palestinians to celebrate ties to the land and resist occupation. It was celebrated this year with special urgency during the ongoing Palestinian genocide. For On the Ground, this is Chantal James.
And that's it for today's show. Special thanks to Chantal James for her coverage of Land Day here in Washington, D.C. This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital on 24 stations on the Pacifica Radio Network, on all your podcast platforms at On the Ground with Esther Averam, and on our website, onthegroundshow.org. In addition to communicating with us on our website, you can let us know you like the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Patreon.com at On the Ground Show. Or also link to every show on my Instagram page, which is Esther_Averam. That's I, V like Victor, E-R-E-M like Mary. You can follow the Free Palestine Movement at shutitdownforpalestine.org and at answercoalition.org. The music we play this hour included Run by Killer Mike, Hijabi by Mona Haydar, Asa Mooney by Algerian artist Warda. The Land Day rally included the Raja chant, which means return, and the song Jana Jana, or Heaven, Heaven, Our Country. And our theme music for the show is Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix. I'm Esther Averam. Until next time, take good care and keep raising your voice. Peace.